The following program is a copyrighted presentation of Glenn Shepherd Seminars, Incorporated.
Hi, everyone. This is your biggest fan, Glenn Shepherd, in beautiful Nashville, Tennessee, and I welcome you to this month's $10,000 Leadership Lesson. For those of you who might be new to this and wondering why we call these $10,000 lessons, it's because it will cost you 10 grand every single time you lose an employee. And people don't quit their job, they quit their boss. Our quote of the month: when an employee can't control their temper, a manager must control the situation. Did you ever see the old Adam Sandler movie, Anger Management, co-starring Jack Nicholson? It was a typical, silly Adam Sandler movie, but it had a pretty good twist to it. I don't know if Sandler wrote the movie himself or if whoever did write it had been working on it for a while, but what made the movie work was the year it came out. It was 2003. And the reason it worked so well, the twist to it, the hook, was that if you're too young to remember, that was 2 years after the World Trade Center attacks in New York City and the terrorist attack on the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. And back then, people were scared to death because none of us had ever lived through that. Nothing like that had happened since our grandparents had experienced the Pearl Harbor bombing at the beginning of World War II in the early 1940s. So in 2003, we were scared it was going to happen again. Nobody knew what to do. People were scared to get on an airplane and fly. We were even nervous about laughing. And those days, again, this is 2003, the early 2000s, Jay Leno and David Letterman were the two huge late-night comedians, and their shows went off the air for a while because they thought it was inappropriate to laugh after the terrorist attacks. And I remember at a certain point, a few weeks, I don't know how long it was, but after a while, it was announced that they thought it was time for us to laugh again. And I remember so well watching the first Jay Leno show and the first David Letterman show afterwards and thinking, it feels good to get back to normal. So this is 2003 now, so things are kind of getting back to normal, but people were still scared to fly, and it was a very tense time in American history. So with that perspective, there's this key scene in the movie where Adam Sandler is sitting on a plane, minding his own business, doing nothing wrong. He's sitting beside Jack Nicholson, who is the therapist, and Jack Nicholson is watching a movie on the video screen on the chair in front of him, and he's laughing and he's saying to Adam Sandler, "You're missing the key scenes here." And Adam Sandler says, "Well, I can't hear it because I don't have a headset." So he asked the flight attendant for a headset. And this very professional woman with perfect customer service voice says, "Yes, sir, I'll get that right for you." Well, she's talking to another flight attendant and they're gossiping about something or cutting up and being silly. And they just, or she just forgets Adam Sandler's request. So a little while later, he says, "Ma'am, can I please get the headset?" And she says, "Sir, do not raise your voice at me. We need cool and calm passengers with what's going on in America right now." And he said, "Ma'am, I just want to get the headset." She said, "I'll get it for you in a moment, sir. Remain calm." So Adam Sandler, who's done nothing wrong, is getting kind of frustrated. And eventually the woman starts taking orders, people's drink orders, and she comes by and he said, "Ma'am, can I please get the headset I asked you for?" And she said, "Sir, do not raise your voice at me. We need to stay calm at this time in American history." And he said, "I'm not raising my voice at you." And the next thing you know, this big guy walks up with this James Earl Jones kind of deep voice. It sounds kind of like Darth Vader. And he goes, "Is there a problem here?" And the flight attendant says, "Yes, this man's getting hostile with me and getting worked up." And Adam Sandler says, "I'm not raising my voice. I'm just asking for a headset, and the stewardess won't give it to me." And the marshal goes, "She's not a stewardess. She's a flight attendant." Now, again, that joke might not be so funny today, but this is 2003 when it was still kind of new that you were supposed to use gender-neutral terms in media and writing. And it was funny at the time. And the guy goes, "Sir, you need to calm down." And Sandler goes, "What is it with you people?" And the marshal goes, "What do you mean, you people?" He goes, "Oh, I wasn't making a derogatory comment. I'm just saying, all you aviation people." So the next thing you know, Sandler gets arrested and he ends up in court. And the judge orders him to anger management classes. The reason it was funny is because everybody was so scared back then about scared to fly and nervous about another terrorist attack. And because Sandler had done nothing wrong, and because the flight attendant had ignored him so badly, and everybody could empathize with him and understand why he would get angry for being falsely accused and being so mistreated as a customer. The movie goes on, and in typical Adam Sandler silly tradition, Jack Nicholson, the therapist, again, who's treating Adam Sandler and a group of other patients for anger management issues, teaches them to use the word goose fraba, which I'm not even sure if that's a real word or not. But in the movie, Jack Nicholson says it's a word that Eskimo mothers would use to calm their children. And by repeating that word, goose fraba, goose fraba, goose fraba, is supposed to calm people down. Well, it was silly. And obviously in the real world, it's not that simple to calm people down. When you have an employee who has anger management issues, it becomes an employee, not just an employee issue, it becomes an entire company issue because it affects everybody else, which means now it's a management problem for you. So in this month's lesson, we're going to look at how to handle angry employees and how to handle them the right way in the real world for three reasons. One, obviously, it kills morale and hurts performance of their coworkers. Number two, it makes you look bad and makes your job a lot harder. But number three, sometimes you have to protect people from themselves. And you've probably had employees who can be their own worst enemy. Employees who are really good at what they do, but they need a little extra guidance sometimes to keep them from shooting themselves in the foot. There's a young woman in West Texas who kind of became the poster child for this. She quit her job back in 2020, right at the beginning of the pandemic when things were getting really crazy. And she was at a Walmart store and she announced her resignation over the PA system. And obviously she was pretty upset. And she became famous, or maybe I should say infamous, so much so that a lot of people started copying her. See if you remember this video.
Attention, all Walmart shoppers, associates, and managers. My name is from Cap 2, and I just want to come on here and say is a racist, stinky is racist. A is a of a manager. This company fires associates for no reason. This company treats their employees like, especially Cap 2 and from Sporting Goods, the cashier, from Garden Center. You are all perverts, and I hope you don't talk to your daughters the way you talk to me. The managers, this company, this position, that big lazy Chris, I quit.
Now, this idea of telling your boss what to do with a job you hate is nothing new. Many, many, many years before this young woman was even born, back in the 70s, there was a country music artist named Johnny Paycheck who had a song called Take This Job and Shove It, because I ain't working here no more. People have had the fantasy of telling their boss off and walking out the door for as long as we've had jobs. The problem is most people can't, or maybe I shouldn't say the problem. The good part is most people can't afford to do that, so it keeps them from doing rash things, stupid things like that. And when I was a kid, and my first job at a Kmart store back in the 70s, we had a PA system like that. And I used to do blue light specials over that PA system, but I would have never in a million years, even at age 16, imagined when I was ready to resign, even though I left on good terms, I left to go to college. I would have never imagined, none of us would have ever quit our job over a PA system because we were all worried about what would happen next when you went to apply for another job. And that would follow you for life. The story would. The difference would be back then, it would just be people talking about it. Today, it lives online. Anything you do lives online forever. In this case, this young lady not only recorded the conversation, her announcement of the PA system by audio, but she recorded video of herself announcing it over the PA system and then posted it on Instagram, on YouTube, so the whole world could see it. And a lot of people, especially young people, became copycats and started posting their own videos of telling their company off and leaving their job. obviously no one had ever taught this young lady the concept of don't burn bridges behind you. Even though you think it might not matter, it will. But I remember the first time I saw this video, and it's funny a little bit at first, as long as you're not involved in it. But when you think about the poor managers, the problem is, I don't know who's guilty of what. She accused people of being racist and sexist and hostile work environment, all kinds of things. Whether they were true or not, the managers have to deal with the fallout of that. Can you imagine being a manager, even if none of these things are true, and you have to now explain to your boss, the district manager or regional manager or the president of the company in Arkansas, why you had a teenage employee who went on a PA system and made such accusations and embarrassed you and the whole company. It's going to blow back on the manager. The one good news in this case, or the one piece of good news, is she was gone. The aftermath would last, but she wasn't Walmart's problem anymore. But that brings us back to the point of this program. What happens when you have an employee who you know is kind of volatile, an employee who you know has a temper, an employee who could be their own worst enemy like that, but who's a high performer, and you want to keep them from doing something stupid and shooting themselves in the foot so that you have to fire them, or maybe because they quit out of anger without thinking it through? Before we get into the behavioral psychology of how to actually deal with an angry employee like that, there's one last little piece of historical perspective we have to put on this, and it is that even though the technology of using iPhones to record an angry resignation like that young woman did in Texas are relatively new, this concept of having a temper and being angry is not new. It goes back through the history of the world. If you happen to be a Catholic or a Christian, you're probably familiar with something called the seven deadly sins, which again goes back thousands of years. If you're not familiar with them, I'll read them to you. And this is in no specific order, and I'm not a theologian, so these are not going to be 100% accurate from that perspective, but it'll give you the basic idea. Again, what are called the seven deadly sins, in no specific order. Number one, pride, which is defined as an excessive love of yourself. Number two, lust, which is defined as illicit sexual desires for somebody else. Number three, greed, which is defined as an excessive desire for money or material possessions for yourself. Number four, envy, which is defined as an intense desire for another person's possessions or abilities. Now, those first four are not surprising: pride, lust, greed, and envy. But the last three are where they get kind of interesting. The next one, number five, is sloth, or slothfulness, I guess it would be, which is defined as laziness or neglect of one's duties. The sixth is gluttony, which most people think of as overeating, but that's broader than that. It's defined as overindulgence, which could be overeating, could also be overdrinking. And number seven, wrath, which is defined as uncontrolled feelings of anger, rage, or hatred toward another person, often involving a disproportionate or long-lasting desire for revenge. The anger issue goes back for thousands of years and is such a big issue, it was considered to be one of the seven deadly sins. So when you have an employee who is someone you want to keep, but you know they have what we call a hairline trigger of a temper, they can just lose their temper just at the blink of an eye, or maybe they're slow to anger, but they do have a temper. And when they get riled up, man, it's hard to calm them down. The key to dealing with anyone who's angry, not just an employee, but even an angry customer or an angry spouse or anyone else, is understanding a basic principle that if you've attended my live in-person seminars you've heard me talk about before called the anger curve. The anger curve is like an emotional roller coaster ride that we all take when we get mad. And if you can understand what the points are on the curve, you can literally predict what somebody else is going to say, what they're going to do, and even what they're going to think before they know what they're going to say, do, or think. And this is the key to controlling an employee who has anger issues. And again, I want to caution you, this is not medical advice. This is just practical facts. Think of the anger curve as an EKG of your emotions. And if you're just listening right now, it's hard to visualize this, so we've included a diagram with the paperwork that came with this lesson. The dotted line where the anger curve first intersects the baseline of emotion, point one, is called emotional balance. That's where you probably are right now. I mean, so this is that moment you're not mad at anybody, but you're not at a ball game either. You're kind of in between. When you start to get mad at somebody, you will go into phase two, which is called escalation. That's where you start to climb the curve. When people start to get angry, you'll see immediate physical changes happen. Their shoulders tend to pull back. Their chin comes up. Their eyes start to dilate. They start to talk louder and faster and deeper. They'll get too close to you, violating your personal space. And before you know it, that person's at point three, which is at the very top of the anger curve. And that's the first critical point on the curve. It's called the point of crisis. And it's really important to understand when someone's at the point of crisis, to be able to recognize it. And there are two clues you can always spot. The first is extremely poor judgment, and the second is loss of self-control. And if you think about that long enough, poor judgment and poor self-control would also describe someone who is legally intoxicated. And that's exactly how you treat someone who's at the top of the anger curve. It's like they're drunk. They can't think for themselves. This is why you've always heard that cooler heads must prevail when somebody's having a little temper tantrum. Now let's bring you down the curve. When people come down the curve, the problem with coming down is they don't stop at that baseline of emotion where they started. They'll crash through it and go all the way down to point four, which is called the anger hangover. It's not until you get up to point five, back at the baseline of emotion where you started, which is emotional balance again, that people will think clearly. So when people are at point three, they're out of their mind. But when they're at point four, the anger curve at the bottom, that's when they tend to be more vulnerable. That's when people start to feel remorse and guilt and regret. When you have an employee who's having a temper tantrum and you know they're at the top of the anger curve, don't try to problem solve then. Don't try to talk to them because it's like talking to a drunk. They're not going to remember anything you say. They're not going to remember anything they say. They're going to say things they would not have said if they were thinking clearly. And the way you can tell that is if you've ever had an employee have a temper tantrum and start screaming and yelling at you, and in fact, not just an employee, anyone who has a fit, notice how after a few hours or maybe a day goes by and they'll come back to you and they'll apologize. It's because they've sobered up. It was like they were emotionally drunk. And that's why you have to treat an angry person like they're drunk. Now, the million-dollar question here is, how long does it take people to come down the anger curve and sober up emotionally? And, of course, the answer to that is, it's different for different people. Some people can sulk or stew or pout for days. Some people get over it in a few minutes. My beautiful bride is one of those people who doesn't get angry very often, but when she does, she gets over it very quickly. Me, on the other hand, I tend to sulk and stew. I started out this morning angry at a software company because we use them for transcripts of audio programs, and we pay them an annual fee. It's $100 a year, so it's not much money at all, but we had discontinued our subscription, and we were trying to use Microsoft Word's transcription services. And Microsoft wasn't working out so well. And I thought, you know, I might want to go back with this original company. And I checked it out and they just happened to have a special running 50% off. And I thought, okay, great. I'm sold. When I went to enter the code they sent me, it didn't take. And I got angry. And I'm quite frankly still annoyed by that. I'm not angry now, but I'm still annoyed because I hate it when a company sends me a coupon to get me to sign up for something or to renew a service and then it doesn't work. You just wasted my time. And that was hours ago. Now, the real person I should be angry with is me, because I should not have been the one dealing with that. I should have forwarded that to one of my employees anyway and said, here, renew this subscription. Let's try this service again. I didn't practice the principle of HBU, which if you've ever taken any of my time management courses, you know, is what's called the highest and best use of your time. dealing with a software renewal, even though it should have only taken 2 minutes, was not the highest and best use of my time. What I'm doing right now, recording this program, is because nobody else can record this program but me, and I should have been focused on this and not letting myself get distracted. So how do you calm people down when they don't, by nature, come down the anger curve quickly? Well, one of the most important things you can do if you're the target of their anger or if you're part of it is give them space. Don't say to people stupid things like, you're making a mountain out of a molehill, or, oh, it's not that bad, or you'll feel better tomorrow. All that does is insult people because it invalidates their feelings and they tend to get angrier. You pour fuel on the fire when you do that. So once they have calmed down enough to talk, and again, you might let them sit in your office and cool down. You might let them sit in their office and cool down, whatever it takes. You might let them walk outside and have a cigarette if that's what they need. When it's time to talk, keep in mind 5 magic words. Focus on conduct, not feelings. Focus on conduct, not feelings. Don't talk about them feeling angry because they might have a valid reason to be angry. But it's not important whether it's valid or they're angry or not. What's important is how they handled it. Slamming the door, screaming, yelling, slamming down the phone. That's not acceptable no matter what happened to trigger their anger. And if they say, well, don't you see why I'm mad? You can say, yes, I understand that you're angry, but that's not what we're discussing here. We're discussing how the situation was handled. And then here's the magic phrase. Say to them, do you think that was the best way to handle the situation? Do you think that slamming the door or slamming on the phone or cussing out your coworker or yelling at somebody was the best way to handle that? Don't say right way. Don't make about right or wrong. Say, was that the best way to handle it? Because that makes it a lot easier. It gives people a chance to save face and say, yeah, maybe I could have handled that a little better. And then say, what would a better way of handling that be? Remember that unless you're dealing with a total sociopath, most people can accept, at least internally inside, that they didn't handle the situation well, because when we get mad, we all do tend to do things and say things that we tend to regret afterwards, again, if you're not sociopathic. So play into that, but give them a chance to save face. And most importantly, you've heard me say a million times, you always praise in public and correct in private. Even if they had their little temper tantrum in front of others, 2 wrongs don't make a right. You still have this corrective conversation in private. Even though they did something wrong, you have to give them a chance to save face so that they don't get defensive. And that puts this month's $10,000 leadership lesson in the books. For those of you who are wondering why I always say I'm your biggest fan, it's because most people never do anything to further their education after they get out of school. But leaders are learners. And the fact that you take a few minutes to listen to these programs every month puts you in a very elite group of people called winners. Now go out there and be the best leader you can be, and I'll see you again next month.
This copyrighted program was produced by Glenn Shepherd Seminars, Incorporated. No part may be reproduced in any form without express written consent of the copyright owner.